Jeanne Flavelle's Hot Commodity Podcast Series. Empowering clients with commercial intelligence, supply chain expertise, and risk management solutions.
Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Mike Coughlin, President and CEO of McKinney Flavelle, and today is October 4th, 2019, and welcome to our Hot Commodity Podcast Series. I'm joined by two guests today, Craig Ruffalo, Vice President of McKinney Flavelle.
Hello. Hey, it's Friday.
It is Friday, and we have a guest.
And
he's actually in the studio today.
We have the Cape Crusader.
The Cape Crusader, himself. Jeff Rosinski.
Jeff Rosinski is in the house.
Hi, Jeff.
Long distance direct to you from the East Coast.
All the way.
Lovely Lafayette, California.
Yeah.
Man.
Great.
Back in some of your old stomping grounds.
That's right. It's nice to be back.
Yeah.
Well, some good weather, too, man.
You're looking good.
Thank you.
You know, about as good as Craig's shoes.
Hey, white shoes are awesome. They're the most comfortable shoes I've ever worn.
You know what I think we're gonna do?
We're gonna take
a picture of those shoes,
we're gonna
put them on the podcast so people can see these wonderful shoes.
I think you should have people vote for them.
Oh,
yes.
I think.
Yes.
All right, all listeners,
vote. Take
whether you like
chance.
These shoes or not.
Oh
like,
my God, they're fantastic.
You're gonna be defriended by everybody on Facebook.
Oh, geez, the followers are, God, they're falling off right now.
Oh, well, that's all right.
Yeah.
What are we going to talk about today?
Before we do that, I want a quick prediction.
Okay.
Who is going to win the World Series?
Houston Astros over the Dodgers in
Ooh.
Six.
Okay. That's pretty specific. You've bet on that.
You know, I'm not paying attention to that right now. I'm involved in college football, NCAA, Florida Auburn game this coming
weekend.
That's going
to be a
baby.
That's going to be a good one.
That's
so,
gonna
good are you going to pass on this?
On the what's the Astro against
the Astro.
Astro, as opposed to the Rangers.
Everybody,
that's the dog from the Jetsons.
No, that was Rastro.
Rastro.
All right, pick one because we got to move on.
Astros,
you're gonna. You know what, guys?
You're not good.
I'm doing it
you're
for
not
you.
Doing
I'm gonna
it
go Dodgers in six against the Astros.
Oh, boo!
Why not?
Boo.
All right, you everybody here. Yeah,
hit the boo button.
I'm sure there's
boo.
Some Yankee fans out there.
Exactly.
But it's a shame the Giants aren't in it.
It's
true.
Right here,
catch out a game.
Yeah, they had a good playoff
run.
Yeah. Okay, well, today I thought we'd talk about two things.
Right.
One, I thought we would talk about the beet industry, how plannings are going, what kind of our expectations
since harvest. Sure, absolutely.
And give people an update there.
Yeah.
As we know, a lot of the sugar is booked for next year, but these delays do cause some issues. We can talk a little bit about that. And then I thought we would shift over to cocoa and talk about this crazy lid.
The living income differential.
Yeah, we could talk about that, Jeff, for a little bit.
You know, that sounded like a USDA thing. They're an acronym crazy over USDA. So.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So, Craig, let's start with you. What is going on with the harvest? What are we having? Good things, bad things? Where should people be concerned?
Mixed bag is the definition I'd use, because I think we have some of the folks in the western region of the United States that are doing pretty well with their harvest. They're in full operations. I think we have all the beet sugar plants actually now starting up. Pre-pile is done pretty much across the country. But if you're going to talk about actually getting in the fields and full on harvest, we've got some issues.
Okay.
I think the eastern sugar beet belt between Michigan and the Red River Valley, and specifically in southern Minnesota's areas, are still so wet. They're getting more rain over the next 5 to 7 days. So getting in the fields and actually pulling the beets out of the ground, not going to be easy, one. And two, as you get more rain, you actually bloat those sugar beets, Mike, and you lessen the amount of sugar content. So one of the concerns that we would have as a processor, if you're a beet processor, is once you get the beets, how much sugar is actually laden in that sugar beet and the energy that it's going to take to get them out. And so you're probably going to see, if not in the October WASDE, certainly by the time we get around to December, as we've gotten through most of the harvest at that point, we'll have all of the data. You'll see sugar content will have probably been lowered, which would put our production below 5 million tons. So I'm predicting now.
Under 5.
For next week's WASDE.
Yeah, that we'll probably see the 1920 beet crop end up below 5 million tons.
Okay, so if that happens, as we mentioned, a lot of people are covered for next year. Does that just mean that prices could jump up a little bit more on a spot basis?
Well, before you go there, I mean, what you say most of the business contracted, where would you peg at this point, Craig? What percent of the business do you think has been written for next year?
I bet about 80, 85% of the beet sugar of a 5 million or below crop.
There you go.
Already contracted.
Good clarification, because it all depends. It starts with the number.
That's right.
And given that, I think the way the sugar beet cooperative is going to approach that, if they only have 10 to 12% left of their book remaining to put on, they're going to be much more selective and more patient with what levels.
And don't forget, they haven't even done retail to a large degree yet. So whatever they're going to target for retail has got to come off of that number. So they're not going to be sitting there looking for a whole lot more industrial business to be booked.
Got it.
Under this current circumstance. I think the other issue that we're all going to look at, and Jeffrey, you can correct us if we're a little off base, is on the supply side for somebody that's under contract. How are they going to deliver against contracts starting off one for new crop business or for new contracts, making sure that your supply base is actually satisfying the orders on a timely basis? Because that's going to become, I think, one of the bigger issues.
Well, especially that could be true if, with the delays we're seeing right now, and if the sucrose content is lower and if beets per ton is lower, rather than being 85 to 88% sold, maybe they're, lo and behold, 90 or 92% because they're going to have lower yields.
Yeah.
And in the next WASDE number, if you take that beet number from 5 million down to 4.9 and change, you're going to lose some sugars there.
And I would think that anything that's available right now is going to be mostly old crop sugar that they had in store. So it's not going to be a lot of bulk rail cars being available up front to start moving all over the country.
Good point.
So wouldn't necessarily be the best of quality either.
Not yet, right?
Exactly. Bottom of the bin, as they say.
So I think right now we're in a little bit of that window of most people a little bit nervous.
Sure.
On both sides, not just the buy side, but the sell side. They don't like to have put in this position either.
No.
So I think just put your seatbelt on, give us 30 to 45 days. We'll get through this as an industry. And then on the other side of it, we'll be back into pure production mode and people will probably not have this worry.
Yeah. Great.
I would agree with what Craig is saying. And I think to a large degree, what we're seeing now is a consequence of the beets going on the ground as late as they did this last springtime.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So they gambled a little bit. And in September, it was all along over the next 3-4 weeks, we're going to make or break the crop.
Yeah.
And what they weren't counting on now is this repeated wet pattern coming across the Platte and through the Red River Valley area, which is not going to make harvest
easy.
You're going to be pulling beets. They're going to be muddy fields, and they don't store well in the piles with a lot of soil on them. And you're going to get a lot of degradation that you could lose additional sugars through slice or through campaign. So we'll have to keep an eye on the weather now, whether you get the frost or any of the cold weather that sets in. But Red River Valley out through the east area, I think there are some issues.
Yeah, at the end of the day, farmers are going to get the crop out of the ground. That's their main focus is to get the beets out, because that's obviously their livelihood. It just puts a little strain on everybody and a little stress, but this too shall pass, as they say, and we'll get through it. But make sure that if you're out there and you've got coverage, you do talk to your suppliers about making sure orders are out.
Get your orders in. Yep. Well, let's shift over to cocoa.
Yeah, okay.
Boy, all right, lid.
Lid.
All right, what is the lid?
What does that mean?
So living income differential, just an acronym for that phraseology. And what they're looking to do is improve the livelihood back to the farmers.
Okay. So that's never a bad thing.
And establish effectively a minimum price that can be guaranteed to the farmers to improve their livelihood, to try to encourage production. But to a degree, they're kind of victims of their own success because of sustainability premiums and some of the other things that we've seen in the cocoa sector.
No question.
We're looking at record crops this year. So a lot of cocoa out there. And what they're trying to do now is guarantee a certain amount going back to the farmer, which I think is a very good thing. The industry would agree with that. But it's just a matter of whether they'll be successful with implementing this $400 living income differential that will go back to the farmer, set up with a sliding scale. And contracting has been very, very slow for this new crop that they want to implement the new lid on starting in October of next year. And the origins have not been happy at all with the pace of contracting. So so there's been a lot of other noise talking about, can we cap production below, at 2 million tons or below, trying to limit supply, almost like an OAQ.
Yeah, I was just going to say,
like a marketing allotment.
A marketing allotment to the farmers so that we don't oversupply the marketplace and depress prices further.
Would you see this potentially, Jeffrey, where it could turn into what they do with coffee, where you've got origin and bean quality, the differentials based on that? So you can have a futures price for Arabica or Robusta coffees, but then when you go to specific origins, you're paying a differential over and above that price predicated on a few things: quality, limited, limited availability, etc. Could you see that in the cocoa bean market?
Well, you already have that to a degree, both in London Life as well as here against the New York terminals. You can always physically deliver cocoa or stop the exchange if you want to do that. And there are set established bean premiums and specs you need to hit to be able to be, tender quality.
Could you do that again on a lid maybe? And then therefore, if it's to try to, like the Rainforest Alliance stuff, and if you want to qualify and get that stamp, you pay an extra so much premiums.
So you just said something that's relevant, which is that the next scheme that the Origins may pursue, not only limiting supply with an allotment type strategy, they are threatening to potentially not make sustainable premiums or certification available unless you're also willing to sign up to the lid and pay that as well.
That doesn't surprise
me. So if you
me.
Want your sustainable cocoa, you can have it, but only if you're also willing to pay for the $300 lid too.
Yeah.
Thereby kind of threatening people's supply of sustainability cocoa and some of the claims that some of these companies have already been very public and vocal.
Correct. Yeah, that's an interesting ransomless approach to the market.
Yeah, you're kind of hijacking and holding ransom people's sustainability programs unless they're really on board and willing to contract to move forward with the new lid.
And I would think that a lot of companies, from the standpoint of what they're attempting to do with cocoa and chocolate and the sustainability and traceability, is also that I think part of that is to give the growers a little bit better livelihood. So not that they necessarily want to pay $300 on top of, but I mean, I think they've already bought into the idea of the farmers' livelihood should be improved.
Absolutely. No one's disputing that. It's just a matter of how much is the government going to take.
Correct.
In terms of setting up the stabilization fund.
Of course.
And how much will ultimately be passed along to the farmer.
And, to be determined,
And if Ghana and Ivory Coast are successful, then you're going to, I think, see other countries, Ecuador and others, trying to follow suit, trying to emulate what they've done. If they don't implement their own program, certainly what you may create is additional demand for some of these other origins as people try to diversify.
Gotcha.
Sure.
So they're not totally exposed to the one avenue.
Cool.
Awesome.
Well, thank you. Great recap.
That's awesome.
Great recap,
yeah,
Craig.
Man.
I can't wait for people to vote on your shoes.
Oh, I'm waiting. And by the way, people, you can mock me all you want, but I'm going to keep wearing them because I'm so comfortable.
When you start wearing skinny jeans, that's when that's the limit.
No way.
So remember to vote whether Craig's shoes are trending or not.
Yes.
Oh my gosh. Well, everyone, until next week, live with an attitude of gratitude, as I always say.
Absolutely.
Enjoy the time with your friends and family. And Jeff, thank you so much for coming
in. It's so awesome to have him here live.
Yeah, yeah.
Thank you for having me.
All right.
Awesome, guys.
Until
have a great weekend.
Take care, everybody.
That concludes this podcast episode. For expanded commentary and more detailed information, log on to McKinney Favelle's IQ Ingredient Intelligence platform and listen to our Market Insights podcast. If you're not a subscriber, visit McKinney-Favelle.com for more information. And as always, follow us on YouTube, LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter.